right, we will get underway if everyone can just get organised. Tēnā koutou katoa, nō mai, haere mai. I open today's policy committee meeting. Before we begin today, I request that we all stand silently for a moment of reflection and respect as we pay tribute and mark the passing of our fellow committee member, Tahu Porakī. Thank you. Tahu held with him a gift of leadership. When we reflect on what makes a true leader, we often think of strength, pride, presence, and wisdom. And indeed, Tahu brought all these strengths and talents. But to be a true leader, one must have heart. And in this Māori Language Week, the words to best describe the true leadership values Tahu held are manaakitanga and kaitiakitanga. Manaakitanga, the process of showing kindness, generosity, support and care for others, of having integrity. Kaitiakitanga is about guardianship and protection of the environment. Both concepts displayed in Tahu's actions. But in recognising the true gift Tahu gave to us as a council and as a committee, it is partnership. Tahu was not afraid to push the boundaries, to ask us, were we showing manaakitanga and kaitiakitanga, and were our words truly reflected in our actions? Tahu's work in creating meaningful partnership will never be forgotten, and we send our condolences to Tahu's family. Aroha nui, kia kaha. Thank you. Kia ora. So, moving on then to the agenda. We do have an apology. We have Councillor Graham Bell, apology for the 2 days, I understand. Is that correct? Okay. We can confirm the agenda, just the one paper today. Are there any conflicts of interest today? No, oh, sorry, I need to move and second the apology, which I forgot. Happy to move that and seconded, Councillor Hope. All in favour?
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you. Now back to where I was, which was conflicts of interest. Nobody's declaring any that I can see. No public forum that I'm aware of today. Confirming the minutes then, the minutes have been circulated. Can somebody confirm them as a true and accurate record? Councillor Hope, seconded Councillor Noon. All in favour?
Aye.
Against? Carried. Okay.
Well, I take both sets of minutes.
Oh, yes, okay, sure. Both sets of minutes, yep. Right, well, the report today is the General Manager's report and it will be presented today by Ms. Dawar. Mr. Newman, he's away today, isn't he, in the Manuhiri Kia?
Yes.
So no doubt we'll hear back from him how that has gone later on when we get together, perhaps council midday. We have the director's report. There has been, as usual, a lot going on in the space of policy, and many of us have been attending meetings with regard to new government proposed changes to NESs and MPSs. Really interesting space to be working in at the moment. I might hand it over, Ms. Dorr, if you would like to comment on anything particularly, otherwise we'll open it up.
Sure, through you, Madam Chair. So just the first thing, if I can take you to paragraph 13, which is what we're calling Plan Change 6AA. The Schedule 1 consultation has closed. Very little comment from parties, so that's moving through, and you'll see a paper recommending that be notified at the council meeting, so that's tracking nicely. We have had a month of mediation on the DCC 2 GP appeals. The difficulty we're having at the moment is a lot of the appeals are site-specific, people wanting rezoning, and the appeals have been moved into the strategic chapters, and the split's a little bit artificial, so we got some really good gains, but there's a lot that we actually need to go back and deal with on a case-by-case basis, so a memo is going back to the court around that, but all parties were pretty amenable to some movement, so that was good. That's probably, I guess, the main things. There's a workshop tomorrow on the first two of the three NPSs, so the NPS HPL and the NPS UD. So we'll take you through those tomorrow, and a workshop on the 25th on the essential freshwater package.
Thank you. Plenty there to think about, and no doubt some comments as well. So, how are we going to address these? Perhaps we'll take emerging issues right through down to proposed regional policy statement, paragraph 11, if anyone wants to comment on those first two pages. Yep, Councillor Lawton, followed by Councillor Woodhead.
Thank you. The extension to the Section 24A investigation, is there any further understanding about why that has been extended or what else has been asked?
Yes, so through you, Chair, what I understand is Professor Skelton was hopeful to have the decision about the Lindis hearing come out from the Environment Court. I guess that indicates it's coming out soon, and that's as far as I'm aware, so waiting.
Thank you. Follow-up question to that then, and with regard to our review postponement of 6A, has that been in question by Professor Skelton?
No, yeah.
We fully briefed the team, Professor Skelton and the team from MFE, and there is no particular issue with that. They fully understand how that works, and of course, given the announcements of this week and the direction that those announcements are taking, we are going to have new rules quickly, in part because the government will set them, and in part because of the plan change that we'll also do. Professor Skelton and his team are back working with staff early next week. So they're revisiting.
Okay. And a very minor question. Paragraph 10, I'm assuming we should know what this is, but what's a PO, the acronym PORPS?
The Proposed Otago Regional Policy Statement.
Right.
Apologies for the acronyms.
Yeah. I knew it would be something that I should totally know, but it wasn't coming to me. So
thank you.
It'd be good for public if they could know what those acronyms are.
We're getting quite a few of them with a lot more MPSs and NESs, and thanks for the reminder. It is important with public papers. Councillor Woodhead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question relates to paragraphs 8, 9, 10, 11 also. So the judge... made an interim decision, that's probably the wrong words. Earlier on, there was some questions asked, which all parties worked on, and agreed some wording, put that to the court, but the judges still said no, which of course is their prerogative. But yeah, I find that slightly disappointing when all parties actually agree on that aspect of the proposed regional policy statement.
Yep.
Where does this leave us?
So through you, Madam Chair, the judge has, it's a bit of an interesting situation because he's approved everything, but he's still commenting on stuff and issuing minutes. So the last minute, he's actually proposed some alternate wording, which is pretty unoffensive. So we are minded just to go with that. We're just circulating that around the parties now. So the key message he's trying to get across is that there are some policies that take precedence over others in the plan, and you should refer to the words in the policies to see that, which is what all parties thought we'd articulated, but he's not getting, which is fine. So his latest suggestions are completely unoffensive, and they'll get us through to the next stage, so that's what we're looking to do.
Well, that's a little more positive. Thank you.
That does sound positive. And you see the paragraph 11 there, we're meeting with legal counsel to explore solutions, and that's one of them, which is great. But just reminding ourselves as well that the national planning standards require regional councils to look at their regional policy statements and determine whether they actually meet the new framework as well. And be good to see a detailed analysis of that for the new council, of what that will mean for them. Initial thoughts were that we didn't meet the type of format that would be required into the future, and we would sort of need within 3 years to come up with a new RPS. So I guess that would be confirmed or not. But, that's a big, big lot of work. And I think if we can manage to satisfy the court that the proposed one is able to be used in the interim, I think that might be a really good solution. So, good one.
Yeah, so I through you, Madam Chair, I'll just speak a little bit more to that. So the national planning standards are pushing towards chapterisation of RPSs, so a particular chapter on each thing, and ours doesn't align with that. So there's a little bit more than a lot of councils can just copy and paste, sounds a bit blunt, but move things around.
Tell us a wee bit more about what chapterisation
is. Yeah, so a chapter on coast, a chapter on air, a chapter on freshwater, a chapter on biodiversity.
We're doing that anyhow. Are we not doing that? Are you joking?
So ours is focused around three pillars. It's got a different format. In addition to the planning standards, through the latest suite of national directions, so the policy statements, there are mandatory changes to RPSs as well. So there's actually several layers of things that that we need to align going forward.
I think we can confirm that we need to do a full rewrite because we can't simply unpick what we have now. And we have to notify that by 2022. So in addition to all of the work we already knew we had, we also have a full RPS that we will have to do in a very short time frame.
Yep. Councillor Kempton.
Yes, I'd just like to make the point that the RPS document as it stood, council agreed when it approved that, was an innovative approach which aligned strongly with the RMA with respect to effects-based considerations, and very much like our water plan, although of course it's further down the line. And it's quite disappointing that we're being driven back towards, we'll talk about this topic now, then this topic, then this topic, when in fact the great commonality is in the other variables that affect all of those. And I suspect that we're seeing water going the same way, to some degree with good reason. I mean, we know that there are difficulties around our water plan, and we've talked about that. But it seems as though that there is a shift back to a very traditional hard, here are the physical things and these are what we will talk about. And I think that that's going to take a significant amount of shift in this council's thinking, because we have been moving very much to align with effects-based thinking. So I'm kind of disappointed, but I understand that we have to do what we have to do.
Thank you. Councillor Laws.
Two things. I'm not disappointed. In actual fact, I think it's fantastic. I think central government's never trusted local nor regional government, with good reason. And it's nice to have a prescriptive analysis coming our way. I think it's also easier for the general public to understand, I have to say, having gone through these myself in another area, and a lot easier to read and to appreciate. So, that'll be good. I am concerned, though, that I don't have a copy of that Environment Court hearing here. And the last time I raised that issue, they were meant to be provided with our papers. Now, I didn't get my papers until Saturday. Have they been circulated since? Because if they haven't, I want to see all Environment Court here judgments coming to this governance table. I can't make a considered decision based on one paragraph, what that says, and our legal advice over the last 3 years has not covered itself in glory. So from now on, I want to see, when the Environment Court says something about our RPS, we get that full judgment coming with our papers, please. And can I get this one, please?
Sure, no problem.
Thank you. Okay, Councillor Scott.
Yeah, I'd like to concur with different things that the last two speakers actually said. Councillor Laws, just getting some information around the RPS. It's such an important document, and I know as an individual councillor, when you want to probe a little bit deeper and understand, you know, what is the sticky point between this council and the port, you know, we're just short of that information, let alone some of these other fundamental issues that have been raised. In relation to Councillor Kempton, you know, I concur with the point that, you know, this council at different times actually sort of felt that it was leading in different areas. You know, 6A was innovative, and, the, you know, from there the RPS in terms of the way it was structured was seen to be innovative. But we're certainly in a time where standardisation is required, and I would encourage this council, like in the future in terms of policy, it needs to be a standard process, but ideally simplified so that the people on the land can actually understand what we're talking about. And it you know, like, we've got all these lawyers pouring all over it and tweaking this, that and the next thing. I went to the meeting on Monday with yourself, Madam Chair, and I think Councillor Deeker was there as well. And, you know, it seems to me there's a certain amount of uncertainty about all this policy stuff that's going on at the moment. You know, there was quite a few there from the rural hinterland just trying to understand that at the end of the day, they just went back to the basics. They're saying, actually, you know, what do you want us to do? And we're really anxious about this. It's going to cost us money. But on the positive side, it seems to me the next 6 months, there's this incredible opportunity to build upon the central government freshwater building blocks, look at what are our local shortfalls, and ideally at some point, maybe a hui or whatever, reconnect with the community. They're in a frame of mind, it seems their minds are relatively open. I think there's a general understanding and acceptance that the status quo is not good enough. So it's really important that this council shows leadership, not only through its policies, like we're talking about here and now, in terms of actions on the ground. So we can keep looking back and bitching,
or we can actually move forward with some leadership, and this is the time.
Yep, strongly agree with you on the need for conversation in an early time rather than waiting until we have solutions or we're proposing yep. something together. We need to be talking now. Whoever's sitting around the table yep. needs to be getting on with that immediately, because you're right, the community's waiting for some leadership and a chance to get together in that type of forum. Councillor Lawton.
Just a bit of reflection on the conversation that's happening at the table. From what I can see and have seen sitting around this table, is that innovation is great, and to a certain extent the effects space was quite forward thinking. The problem is, from what I could see, is we put in a policy and then we sat on it and did nothing. We gave no ongoing funding to look at research about how you'd actually implement that. We stopped talking to the community and said, go forth and figure out, you know, how you're going to measure, how you're going to monitor and report back to us about the effects of this, of your activities. And we'll sit here and wait to receive the information. Leadership is about making sure that when you put in a new, innovative, forward-thinking piece of policy, that you've actually got actions and support back to the community. And so if we're going to go forward and, you know, really hope that we continue to think innovatively, but we have to actually be leading by supporting and creating those changes. Otherwise, let's stick with everyone else and make sure that we're doing it the best possible way we can and creating frameworks that everyone actually understands. Because, you know, with the best intention, it wasn't leadership that we were showing. It was a throw it out there, and the community suffered from it. So, yeah, it was an eye-earn.
So through you, Madam Chair, if I can just, I guess, comment on that. One of the really key things going forward with all of our plans is developing an implementation plan alongside, so that nothing goes in unless we know what it looks like for consents, what it looks like for compliance, what it looks like for the person on the ground, and that we've got the program to support it, so that it's a complete process. So that's a really important part, and something that the staff have learned from perhaps some of the other stuff.
Thank you. Councillor Noone.
Sorry, Madam Chair, I don't want to continue the debate, but just a couple of comments. I think we're in a situation we're in. It's like a state of flux to a certain degree, where you've had case law develop, the King Salmon scenario. You've had changes at MPS level, NES level. So through no fault of anybody's, we're having to be nimble and adjust and satisfy judges, etc. So it is what it is. And I feel sorry for the community because they are having to absorb these changes whilst being confronted with consents, etc. So the sooner we're able to deal with our RPS, the sooner the latest iteration of the MPS freshwater management is adopted. And as soon as we've got the judge satisfied, I mean, once we get all those stars lined up, we'll not only be happy around this table, but the community will be happy and at least have some confidence about what they're dealing with.
Thank you.
Can I just ask a question, Gretchen? Sarah, you've said that we will require a full rewrite of the RPS by 2022. Is that to satisfy something, or is
yes.
that...
That's to satisfy the National Planning Standards. So anyone who doesn't comply with the National Planning Standards with their RPS must have their RPS operative by 2023. And so the full notification date is 2022. So that's the frame in which we're working. Yeah, but I suppose I just would like to also just make sure that we're fully cognizant of just how much this organisation is facing. So it's very important to remember that we have the deemed permits issue, we have an air plan, a waste plan, a coast plan that are all more than 10 years old and so need to be reviewed. We've already committed to our water plan review and have to do that to be compliant with the freshwater MPS. And while we've been working in our own minds towards full notification by 2025, that's going to be tougher, and the expectation is that we're fully done by 2025. We've now got a rewrite of the RPS. We've got various MPSs coming at us, biodiversity, highly productive land, urban development capacity. We don't meet our requirements for urban development capacity at the moment and need to get on top of that quickly. And so what I'm signalling to you is that this is an awful lot for one organisation to deal with. Some of it is of our own making and some of it isn't. And that puts a strain on the organisation in terms of not just policy staff, but all of the inputs that are required into that. So, you know, we involve our scientists, our environmental monitoring people. So right across the organisation there is impact. And I suppose all I'm doing is flagging to you that we have some of that work budgeted for, some of that work is not budgeted for. So the RPS, full RPS rewrite, for example, is not budgeted for. And the demand, extra demand that we'll talk to you about when we come together for the final council meeting in regards to quite simply just what we have to do for water is significant. So I just think it's important to remember, yes, we need to engage with the community, but actually the drain on the organisation is also significant. And so I just want to paint that picture for you.
Very useful to know, and in determining what our budget will look like going forward, we'll be very keen to see exactly what that looks like, and recognising as well as policy, we need to be doing, and I guess that's what people have been talking about around the table as well. So if we're going to be out there supporting people to actually make a difference now, and as we heard on Monday night from MFE, I think it was very key, John Penno saying that the last thing we need at this point is people to not get on with making incremental changes and wait until 2025, because when they get to 2025, it's going to be even more costly to claw back to where we were now and further back again. So we need to be making actual change as well at the moment, and council needs to be supporting people to be doing that. So we need to really see a clear picture as a region, saying we as a region, of what it is going to cost to do all this stuff, and paint it back to the government of what do you really actually want us to be achieving in the regions. Because for us to rewrite a regional policy statement in 2 years is actually impossible, if it's going to be meaningful. For us to redo all our water is a massive amount of work, and we need high-quality science. We need it to be meaningful. We need to be implementing the policies we've got now as well. It's massive, and we don't need to tell you that, but we do need to see it clearly and realistically, and not cutting corners as well. What does it really cost for science? What does it really cost for compliance now, for education, for everybody? And we need to be clearly painting that to the community. They have a right to see that forward-looking view, and also to the government of what it really means. It's not that it's wrong, because we do need to make changes, but we also need to prioritise and make sure our rates are targeted. So, yeah, it's a big picture.
Are we going to discuss this at all? Is there an end point to this discussion?
I guess it's not really an end point to the discussion at this point. We're signalling that there's a whole lot on the horizon proposed nationally, and this is what the paper's saying. And as usual, we set an annual plan, and we've got staff saying to us, well, we're feeling a lot of pressure, and it's not just an LTP discussion, it's actually probably sooner than that with annual planning.
Well, that's exactly the point that I was trying to make.
Okay.
Was because... okay. We're living in... Sorry, Michael Deaker, I apologise. We're living in very dynamic times. I think that's the best way to describe it. We've had some deficiencies in our own organisation pointed out, and we're seeking to remedy those as well. we can't wait for the long-term plan to provide the resources, and I don't think we can wait for the annual plan either. If you've identified needs in the organisation and you've already done that, why are we waiting until next June and July to provide the resources? Why aren't we saying to our chief executive, off you go, now? This is a very ossified organisation. It works in structures. It loves working on plans. It doesn't do anything in between. Well, if we're going to be nimble and dynamic, tell our chief executive, off you go, identify the resources, bring your paper back, and if we've got to provide the funding now, we're going to provide it. We're not going to wait 18 months, and we're not going to wait six. Because all of those delays are going to factor up at the other end. This is the first time I've heard today that we're going to have to rewrite the regional policy statement. Oh, well, that's the first time I've heard it in toto.
And
what it means. I also hear what you say. Mm. We need people on the ground now interpreting, so we need more staff there. And we don't need them in 6 months' time. We need them now.
Okay, Ms. Gardner, then a couple of speakers.
So you're exactly right. We have some large budgets, two around water particularly, that help us and so give us a level of flexibility around staffing and the way that we resource. So we are being proactive in terms of looking at what we need, and we're not sitting on our hands in terms of recruitment. The other side to that is we had budgeted for the urban development change that we needed to make to the RPS. Of course, there's little purpose in doing that when we've got to rewrite the RPS. So there is some budget that will provide a small part of what we need for the RPS, but not the entire part. My intention is when we next meet, I've asked the staff to consider, just in the water framework, what the resourcing and cost might look like for some of the things that are included in there. In particular, because we have a whole lot of new monitoring requirements for things that we don't currently do. So there will be a whole bunch of things that we will have to pick up as far as monitoring goes. And so that has an impact not just in our science area, but also in our environmental monitoring area. And we also have other staff in other parts of the organisation that do some of that work. So I've asked staff to start looking at that. So we're certainly going to start painting the picture for you. And my intent, and I've been signalling it for a while now, I know I think the last couple of times we've met, I've signalled that we are going to be asking for funding for science resources. The intent is that we come back to you with a package that says, look, best guess, based on what we now know, this is what funding is going to look like. That said, of course, there are other challenges that we face, not just the policy challenges, but implementation challenges. We'll have the implementation of the PEST plan and what that's going to cost that needs to be considered. And we also have said this year's a planning year for biodiversity, and there's a big conversation to have about biodiversity moving forward and just what the role is that you want this organisation to play, because at the moment there's actually a very limited amount that the organisation does in terms of biodiversity. It does biosecurity, but not a whole lot of biodiversity. So there is a big conversation to be had. Some of that will come through annual planning, but some of that will also come earlier.
Thank you. Councillor Woodhead, then Mr. Allison.
Oh, thank you. Mrs. Gardner's answered much of. So there is some flexibility in the existing programs. There's also a need for some clarity. So the meetings held this week are based around discussion documents for the freshwater and a whole lot of NESs sitting off the side. I was at the meeting earlier in the afternoon on Monday and with the MFE, the consultation meeting, and there was a number of questions there asked of MFE which they didn't have answers for around the linkages between the urban and the rural, timings, monitoring, some clarification on some of the details. So I think we'll need to wait for a bit more visibility on some of that as it works through the process. The other part of this, which we haven't got a view on currently, is the review of the RMA that the Minister's clearly signalled and is being worked on currently in Wellington. It's when that whole package comes together at some stage, hopefully through 2020, that there will be much clearer clarity on some of these, hopefully. And there was actually some pretty good calls at the meeting I was at on Monday for give us the whole picture and let us get on with it for the next decade almost. Because this incremental tweaking every 18 months, 3 years, whatever it is just causing our communities so much churn, let alone the organisation that we're sitting around the table of today. So I sympathise with the sentiments of Councillor Laws, but there's a bit of time to pass before we've got to be careful with knee-jerk reactions and make sure that we understand the whole, the implications of the whole, and staff are working on that. We'll start to see that in 2 weeks' time.
It's true. Thank you for reminding us of that. I guess even without these changes in the SMPS, we've got some timelines with the RPS and the water plan and deem permits and various other things that we should be doing, like the coast plan and air plan and biodiversity. So even without this, there's a work program that we can be painting a clearer, more transparent picture of exactly what's involved with that, I think. Mr. Allison.
Madam Chair, I think some of the questions have been answered, but the news about the RPS having to be rewritten is quite significant beyond the council, I think, for the communities that are going to be affected. But I don't know whether it's to chapterise it or to redo the RPS, and so the significance of it potentially relies on the extent of the changes required. But that's the council's principal document.
Yeah.
So it can't be rushed, it's got to be done properly. Yes. And so that's what it's really, it's significant in the detail of those changes. If it's just to comply with the NPS, the National Planning Standards, to chapterise it, but potentially that does still require all the community to have their say. So it could be quite big. And so I just... emphasises the importance of the RPS and that it I would like to understand better the implications of that rewrite, whether it's chapterisation or complete review.
Yeah, I think maybe it is a really important point and I'm sure you could help, but I think probably for the new council it would be good to have a full paper, and also in partnership with Iwi, who had a big part in drawing up the proposed and partially operative RPS that we've got now, and we have a chapter on Maori values and woven throughout as well to unpick all that. It is massive for everyone in the community. We had every group, every industry come along, and it's very meaningful to everyone. You can't just unpick it and say, well, okay, this policy worked last time here, we'll just slot it in again. Everyone will want to have a say again. So, yeah, let's get it transparent of what the planning framework is saying and what then would we maybe be best to do as a new council from there, and have a good chance to think about it. That would be helpful. Thanks for raising that. Okay, sorry, we are having a good discussion,
sorry,
though. Councillor Deaker.
Probably final comment.
Yep.
When I reflect back on all of this process, even going back three council chambers ago, four possibly, to where we started talking about 6A and the effects-based approach. And we immediately became quite proud of the idea of being innovative, of being in a leadership role and taking an approach that nobody else had been clever enough to think about. In hindsight, that was a bit of a smarty-pants approach. And maybe to some extent the RPS was as well. because we were doing it differently and we thought better than anybody else had done. And we're now seeing that there are very significant risks in having that kind of mindset. And it was reinforced for me at the meeting with the officials on Monday night. I thought they lost an opportunity because there was such a good turnout of people and their presentations were quite frankly shallow, in my opinion. But I do hope that now we have learnt the lesson that unless you know what the NPS says, what the NES says, what the planning framework actually says, then you don't start putting words on paper. We are a creature of legislation and of regulation. We don't make the rules, we follow them. And when you've got a minister like David Parker, that's especially important because he is clear, determined, and unequivocal in his approach to improving the state of the environment of New Zealand. And he wants us to activate what he and his ministry lay down in the planning documents. So let's just make sure that before we go any further with a new RPS, with a new water plan, with a new anything, that we know exactly what the rules are and we follow them. We don't get all smarty pants and innovative.
Carry Councillor Neil.
Madam Chairman, I'm not going to disagree with Councillor Deacon, but I would say it's very hard to draw up plans when the goalposts keep moving. That's all
Okay, thank you. Right, well, that's probably... Councillor Hope, you have had your hand up a while.
I wanted to talk, Madam Chair, to Ms Dawes, actually just about 2GP, and it didn't feel right to go backwards when we really were having a good in-depth discussion, but I do agree with what you say, Councillor Neil, and that's, I think, how a lot of people in the community feel. The goalposts keep shifting. So, you know, we just have to... steady as the ship goes. Ms Dawes, may I just ask you very quickly, and I'm sorry because it has been such a good discussion, I feel like I'm
going back to DDP.
Just wanted to ask you, you have obviously these parts where you appeal and there's some rulings. Is there an actual timeline that 2GP has to be wound up by, or is it just can something continues on when you actually finally reach an agreement, or there's a mediation or a settlement, you know what I mean, where you can come to an understanding, a common understanding. How does it work? Sorry, just remind me.
Yeah, no, so through you, Madam Chair, the judge set down a month for the first lot of strategic mediations, but out of that there's a lot of follow-on work to be done, meetings. So within that month we had to have the mediations and report back to the court, so that report back will say we've made progress, we've still got more to do. And until we've resolved those to a point that we can move on, we're stuck with the strategic chapter. So there's still some more work to be done. There's no particular timeline in terms of when the next lot of topics will be heard, so nothing's been set down by the court. Judge Forthook is waiting to hear back on that first set. And there are possibly a dozen matters that need follow-up out of those mediations, so... even when that's going to be done, I can't even give you a clear picture. There's lots of parties involved, so it's a bit difficult.
Thank you. Thanks for all the great discussion on that section. I just don't want to gloss over biodiversity there, which has quite a report as well and quite a bit happening in that space. As we know, we're having mapping done at the moment, so that we can see what we have got across Otago and prioritise accordingly. We've also got a workshop coming up on Friday, I think, with key players, which I wasn't aware of. So that's great to see that happening. There's some comment around... the two outcomes that we had at the most recent hui where we all got together, which was run by the Conservation Board, and two outcomes that came from that was a regional strategy with shared goals across iwi agencies, group and land users, and then also just recognising the importance of storytelling. It sounds a bit simplistic, but actually it came out as one of the highest priorities of us, you know, being proud and recognising that we all have a connection to our environment and our biodiversity was the other one. But the first one about a regional strategy and shared goals, again, this is really important and where things like RPSs actually can make a difference as well. We've got some good policies in the partially operative one around biodiversity and regional focus. We have an internal strategy which we've developed, and great to see that the MPS on Indigenous biodiversity lines up with that and is generally consistent, we think, so that's really great. But we've had a call from players like DOC, like iwi, like Fish and Game, like any of the statutory bodies and other agencies interested in biodiversity, that ORC is a leader in this space regionally, and that actually we'd like a regional strategy on biodiversity that's led by this council as well. So that's another big bit of work to do in getting together and making that meaningful. It's more than what we've done already, which is more internal. Yep. And then also just wanted to note as well in here that we've got about developing a business case once we do have mapping done. And that's good, but what does a business case look like in biodiversity? Normally when you do a business case, you're looking at what are the commercial benefits of doing something. When you're developing a biodiversity case, I think it's something different from a business case. It's perhaps a priority ranking method or something, but for some things, which might be highest priority, they may not be making the most business sense. It might be the wrong term, I think. Yeah.
So through you, Madam Chair, just that business case is around the cost of implementing the biodiversity and biosecurity work, so it'll outline all of the things, including those things that potentially are not the most cost-effective but are the most environmentally successful.
Beneficial. Councillor Deacon, then Councillor Laws. Yeah,
just a question, Madam Chair. The hui on Friday on biodiversity, the unwashed invited to that? Because I would love to be at it.
So through you, Madam Chair, I can circulate that agenda. There have been quite a number of parties that have pulled out, unfortunately, but I'm more than happy to circulate that agenda.
Thank
if you would wish to attend.
And it wouldn't be offensive if councillors turned up?
I don't think that you are offensive, no.
Councillor Deacon will be in touch.
Absolutely.
But thank you for that.
Yeah,
thanks. We have been involved in previous ones. I don't think we'd be too offensive. Councillor Laws, then known.
Are we taking other parts of this report, or are we still staying on biodiversity?
We'll stick with biodiversity,
okay, sure.
But I'll come back to you if you've
got
a biodiversity council known.
Thanks, Madam Chair. And it just relates to the hui. And I'm trying to understand when it talks about the purpose is to find common ground where we can work together across landscapes and ecosystems. And I'm trying to understand how does that line up with the mapping project, and does that purpose relate to the high level or does it relate to particular projects? And if it relates to the latter, I would have thought the mapping would be required first, but I just wanted to understand how that all fits in.
So through you, Madam Chair, so you are right that the mapping, we need the mapping first, but one of the purposes of the hui is to actually understand what everyone is doing so that once we've got the mapping we can pull together projects to avoid doubling up, to make sure we're all going the same way. So the hui was always intended to happen. We did think about waiting till after we had the mapping, but the parties were keen to share before that. So there's a little bit of potentially overlaps, but hopefully that will, once we have the mapping, that will just all lock it into place.
Thank you.
Councillor Scott.
Biodiversity is one of our four pillars.
Mm-hmm.
We always seem to do everything but address biodiversity. You know, when you talk about recognised importance of storytelling, well, there's been so much storytelling around this table, but not a lot of action, it seems to me. In terms of an immediate target, I would be hoping that in that next annual plan, that not only have we got outputs from our mapping, that we've addressed a biodiversity strategy, and we're actually moving forward. Biodiversity, as you know better than I, Madam Chair, is so integrated into water quality, all the water stuff, the plant stuff, that if we're going to move forward in terms of fresh water and all these things 2025, then we need to see plants going into the ground and valuing what we already have. You know, look, this is... We need more than storytelling, Madam Chair.
So you're right. The timing is the challenge. So the mapping is not going to be complete before we've got to go through the annual plan process. So that's quite tricky. But I think...
Is it? I mean, that...
It is from the point of view that what the mapping will tell us is about where we need to put our efforts. So that's one of the issues. But I think the conversation that we can have to inform the annual plan is about what is the role that this council wants to play. Because we have a strategy, we're talking about leadership, we're not boots on the ground necessarily. We don't have a bunch of staff who, you know, are going to pick up their shovels and necessarily be the ones to plant plants. I think there's a range of options about the way that we can do our work. One big decision might be, you might go, once we have the mapping, well, this is really interesting. There's a real opportunity here to have a regional park in a really strategic location. That might be the thing you decide to do. And that gives you a whole lot of gains, but in a concentrated area. You might say, well, okay, we can see what's being done through the Eco Fund, but actually
exactly. That's
not necessarily giving us some of the gains we need to get in terms of what the mapping's telling us about where the efforts need to be and the connections that we need to have through different corridors for biodiversity. So you might decide to do something different. Other regional councils put money into QE2 covenants, for example. We don't do that. That might be something that you want to consider. So I think there's a whole range of options and discussion that we have to have about what is the role that you want us to play. Is there a funding piece in there? Is there a leadership piece in there? Is there a boots on the ground piece in there? What does it look like? And so I think that's the conversation we should have and can have ahead of the mapping. The mapping will then inform exactly where we put those efforts.
Okay, thank you. I'm conscious of time. We need to keep rolling today, but I'm not going to cut us off there because I know we've got Manuhira Care, Aero Cadrona there still, and Councillor Laws, I'm assuming that's the thing you would like to comment on. Yeah.
Oh, just before that, I just wanted to clarify number 25. And that is the Lindis.
Oh, seems, yes, the Lindis, yep.
It seems that so much of our future planning and policy and politics will be around that decision. And in that, it says that there are two decisions that are going to come out. What do you mean?
So, through you, Madam Chair, one on the resource consents, one on the plan framework.
They're going to do the resource consents at the same time as the plan.
So they were heard together, and that my understanding is that two decisions will come out.
Okay. When that comes out, will it be automatically sent to all councillors?
Sure.
Cool. Excellent. Can I go to the Manuhira Care now?
Sure, go for it, yeah.
I'll take you to to paragraph 30, the last paragraph in that particular section. Before that happens, before the staff start writing anything, I think it's probably a good idea for governance to have a crack. So once you've got all your science done, and once you've got your values, which we'd quite like to know what they are, thank you very much, rather than staff go away and frame up an options paper, I think governance needed input at about that time to say, okay, these are the options too. I don't like staff leading this, frankly. I think governance should lead this. It's too important to leave. And I think that before we give staff a steer, we need to have that discussion. So when the values stuff's come back and we decide what the values are that are important, and then we're aware of what the science and hydrology is, we can give staff a steer on the options and have some input into that straight away. That's what I think. And
hey,
I'd just like to see if we can get, interject governance into that. Because it will save a whole lot of problems later on.
I think that's the normal way of proceeding. So all of that information comes together and is put together by our planning and technical experts, and we usually present it in a workshop with what that information looks like. It's usually quite a long one because there's a lot to understand, and I think, yes, that process does happen. But Ms Gardner, would you like to comment on what you were thinking?
It's absolutely our intent that at each stage we will come back to council with details about where things have got to, and you will be asked to make decisions along the way to give us direction. I wasn't entirely clear with your first statement. It sounded like you wanted to write...
It says here, this is what it says. The words are, staff are combining the values information from the May community meeting with scientific and economic analysis to develop potential scenarios for future use.
Yes.
Now, before that happens, it seems to me that governance need to have...
So we can come back to you with the values and we can have a discussion around the values, but the work is actually proceeding now. So we have the technical advisory group, which we came to you, explained that we were going to have a technical advisory group, and you, as part of the paper, you know, that was accepted. As part of the work that the technical advisory group's got to, we're right at the point now, as soon as the CHESS model was finished, those scenarios can be run. They're not necessarily just our scenarios, but they may be the scenarios from others also. So, for example, irrigators might want to run a particular scenario, and we can put that through the model. At each stage, we will come back to you. So I imagined that we would come back to you with a range of scenarios that had been worked through inside of the technical advisory group, which is all of the technical parties who are involved in the plan change. So representatives of all of the main stakeholders, iwi and fish and game and DOC and irrigators, etc. We'll then come to you with scenarios and help you to understand the impacts of those scenarios, and from there you would give us some direction on where you were wanting to go. I just go back to your first statement, because what I thought initially you were asking, what you were saying was that you wanted to write, you want governors to write the plan.
I didn't say that.
That's not what you meant. No. That's fine. Yeah, so
it's just the way it's worded at the moment. I hear what Council Laws is saying, is that it's the staff will write it up and present it back to the community, and there's not a check by the governors at any stage.
So we completely understand that your role is to determine the policy direction. We completely understand that. All we'll do is assist you by putting the information together and providing you with the various options and the understanding of the impacts of each.
Yeah, but this is where I have my problem, and let me explain it. We're dealing with an objective and a subjective issues here. So the objective is science. What does the science tell us? What do the facts tell us? What does the ecology tell us? What does the hydrology tell us? What does the environmental monitoring tell us? Yeah, there you go. And then we're dealing with values, which is inherently a subjective. Now, I want to know what the objective is before I even think about what the values is. And I don't want one compromised by the other. Do you understand what I'm saying?
do understand what you're saying, but they do have a relationship.
They can have a relationship after we have our steer on that.
So
it would be absolutely wrong, in my view, Madam Chair, for the staff to go off on a particular focus or to develop scenarios without a steer from governance as to what we would like to also see incorporated as part of those scenarios.
Right, so I think we can have that conversation. What's important to understand is that values come first, and values are the things that must be determined before you go towards setting limits and objectives. So values have to be determined first, because they are the platform from which you set objectives and limits.
Through you, Madam Chair, can I just also add, the project plan that we presented a few months ago had two different processes, one for the Manahitakia, one for the Arawa and the Kadrona. The Arawa and the Kadrona process set out the steps that we were going to take, which was that the staff would be developing the scenarios to go back to the community. They are almost done. So we can bring them back to you, but the position from the governance at that time was just to go and do it. So we have gone and done it. If that's now not what you want, that's, I'm just telling you that was what you agreed and that's what we've done. The Manahitakia is different. The idea with the Manahitakia is that reference group will be the ones developing the scenarios. That's why it's really important we've invited them to next week's values sessions. We want them to be fully involved in leading those sessions with the staff, because they are the ones that are going to have ownership of preparing the scenarios. Again, that was what was in the project plans, and that was what was agreed to a few months ago. So that's where the processes are going.
But I never signed up for something to work independently of this governance chamber, and neither did we. We signed up for you to go and do the reference groups, technical and, if you like, collaborative around values, but at no point was the idea, well, you'll just look after it. It's got to come back to here on regular basis for updates, for our assessment about what more information do we need, what sort of steer do you need at this particular point of view. I do not want us to see you get us back into a position where we were in Cromwell last April. And that was when you let staff just go. Okay, so there's a history here, and it's not a good history. So I want to make sure that governance are part of this process all along the way, and that there's regular reporting. I don't want a summary. I want a workshop, whatever. But we need to be having that discussion. And for us to be excluded from that discussion because we're governance is wrong.
I guess identifying the appropriate times when it would come back to the governance table so that we all understand when that might be. So it might not be in an early stage of we've got the values and we're checking with the community if these are the right values, but it might be at a stage when we're thinking, well, these are the flows that we're going to put forward, or whatever the quality that we're going to put forward into the proposed plan change. So yeah, I don't know, but I would agree that at some point governors do have a say on what their proposed plan is going to look like, and to be able to understand that's part of normal process. Yeah. And agree, so let's just paint when that will be so people will know. It's not appropriate to be interfering in every step of the journey when it's a community derived process, and also things will be tested in hearings as well. So just because a proposal goes forward doesn't mean it's going to be the final one. It'll get well and truly tested as well. But yeah, agree. Let's be black and white about when it is appropriate. Councillor Scott, sorry, timing is needing to go on.
I think you summed it up well. I mean, Councillor Laws has raised a valid point, and I think you, Madam Chair, have summed it up well. A detailed question. The summer irrigation is kicking off. Have we got, as a council, our technical ducks in a row for collecting data and so forth? Yeah?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. No. Good.
Sorry, Councillor Alton.
I'm just checking that this is included in the update, right? So this
part of our papers today.
Cool.
Yep.
So Councillor Law has been talking about objective, subjective, sort of the top bits, the objective, and the bottom part, sort of the subjective to a certain extent. plus or minus the values conversation. The NPS, as I understand it, in the new changes proposed last week, actually put quite a bit of a baseline on what those values can actually be, right? So that whole framework has now changed, and I did hope that we would have so we're going to have that update and a discussion about that at the council meeting on the 25th.
Yes, that's right.
Okay, because that is actually kind of crucial in terms of providing information back to the community, which essentially says, in summary, just because you think that your economic outcome is more important than the environmental outcome, there's a bottom line for your environment. It's got to be included in your values assumption. So that's kind of swayed that discussion in the community to a certain extent. And what I'm just wondering, is there a standardised framework? So paragraph 28 talks about the use for a suitable hydrological framework for assessing diverse management options, so your various scenarios, I'm assuming. I would have thought there was a pretty, again, I'm trying to figure out, are we trying to be innovative and different, or is there already a framework that's used within the NPS for coming up with a hydrological for assessing those diverse management options, or are we having to create something with the community before we then go forward?
So through you, Madam Chair, there's no direction in the NPS currently, so every region's doing it differently. The basic fundamentals of a hydrological model are the same. It's just the particular component parts that you add to it. So
depending on the
setting, the context,
and the
issues. Value you're assessing.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Right. Yes. Yeah. So the intention was that that chairs would be able to be, the Manahitakia data would come out, we'd be able to put another catchment data in and use it in the same way. So it's set up to be replicated through FMUs. So it's not just for Manahitakia, we're just using it for Manahitakia at the moment. But that model should suit and work through all of our catchments.
So when you talk about scenarios, it's scenarios variating between your climate and your use, and then those scenario variations drop in to be assessed against the impact assessments?
So the sorts of things when we talk about scenarios are things like, do you anticipate you want your community to develop in a more urban manner? So is the pressure urban growth and maintaining what you've currently got, or is it urban growth with some improvement? Is it, you know, rural expansion with some kind of change? So they're very qualitative scenarios when you have that conversation with the community, because the numbers aren't... the numbers come out later, so it's very much about what you see. So, for example, in the Cardrona Basin, the pressure is urban growth, and the community have said they like what they've got. So one of the scenarios that that we're looking to develop is how do you provide for urban intensification and maintain the existing water quality and quantity? And there are different levers in that you can pull as well, so... finding more water, using more water more efficiently, sharing water around. You know, there's a whole lot of different component parts of that as well. So
the extent to which they go to is also going to be managed by the likes of the new NPS.
Bookended, absolutely. So so a community might say, well, we want to take 50% more water. That actually just doesn't comply. So, you know, we have the conversation and say, this is what we heard. This is unlawful and it's off the table. And so the bookend comes in a little bit, and this is as far as we can go within the realms of what the legislation lets us. And so within that range, where do you sit?
Mm. Thank you. We need to keep moving. Just wanted to note and thank Otako Marae and Mr. Ellison for generously hosting the reference group. That was a great day, and thank you for hosting us as well. Councillor Woodhead and I attended, and just brilliant to get everyone together. A lot of people first time on a Marae as well. But reference group is going really well, and a big step forward for sharing everyone's values. So thanks for that. Right, we'll draw the policy committee to a close, and thank you everyone for persisting with us and the good quality of debate today. Thank you.
I move that we receive the report.
Sorry. Good idea. Councillor Noon's moving that, and Councillor Hope is seconding. All in favour?
Aye.
Against? Carried. Now we're closed. Thank you.